other guys. Then you didn't come up here because you were sore at me? Nah, I agreed to come up here before you acted like a shitheel. I came up here to make an easy $100. I didn't know you were hard up for cheddar. I'd have helped you out. To make it sound desperate, I said easy. Besides, Myrtle wanted to meet some rich guys. How's a girl supposed to get by now? I know 100 girls can run a bead with an arc welder as well as any guy, but what are they doing since the war? Typing memos or answering phones if they're lucky, folding shirts and changing diapers if they ain't. And the real unlucky ones, well, you know what they're doing. Besides, Sal said they would be dancing. I didn't know you liked dancing. I didn't want to mention it. What with your bad foot and whatnot. That was nice of you. Yeah, I got my moments. Hey, you got anything to eat in here? I could eat a horse. I brought you half a meatloaf sandwich, but Pookie took it. That fuck. But there's some coffee in the thermos under the seat. Cup down there, too. You fix it like you like your women? Yep. Sealed in a metal tube with a screw top. She dug under the seat, came up with the thermos, dove again for the cup, surfaced with the cup and a big grin. So you get what I mean about the general being awkward. I do, I said, because I do. So you have this moon man. Strictly speaking, I think he's probably from Mars or Jupiter or some other place. But I like the sound of moon man. She poured herself a cup, offered me a sip. I shook it off. Me too, I told her. But now you got him, what are you going to do with him? She lit up like a kid on Christmas. Are you kidding? I'm going to sell him to Ripley's, believe it or not, so they can put him in the museum down in Fisherman's Wharf. Charge tourists 2 bits to take a look at him. I'll be rich. I might even tunnel out a couple of extra bedrooms in my place. Heck, I might dig out a closet big enough to put a chair in, so I can look at all my new outfits. That is an excellent angle. But I think first we have to take him to the Chronicle, and let them take pictures of him and you, because these taxmen seem quite determined to send any and all witnesses of the Moon Man to the bottom of the bay, so to speak. And if they will scrag an Air Force general, I don't think they will hesitate to ice a couple of feisty kids like us. So we should take him to the city? She asked. Yeah, to the Chronicle, or the Examiner, or both. Oh, okay. Then according to that sign back there, we need to go the other way. I knew that. I just went this way because I thought you'd want to see the ocean. Besides, if we go back to the city, there is a chance that Pookie O'Hara will be more than soared up at me and my friends, and will put us all in a sack. Different sacks, although he will need an extra large sack for Lone Jones. Every plan has a few bugs, said the cheese. I should have just popped one in Pookie's noodle when I had the chance. Ooh, tough guy. You know the safety was on when you handed me that heater back at the cabin, right? Someone could have got shot. Turn this jalopy around. You gotta buy me breakfast and make me famous. It took Clarence most of the night to find his partner Potter wandering around the hills of Sonoma County. As it turned out, Potter was a decent pilot, a skill that Clarence was not aware he possessed until it was needed, and Potter had done a bang-up job of crashing General Remy's DC-3. What Potter was not quite as good at was skydiving, as he'd only done the requisite emergency training for pilots during the war, of which calculating altitude and wind drift were not a part. He had also neglected to take a field radio with him, so consequently when the wind took him several miles from where he and Clarence had agreed to rendezvous, he wandered the countryside for several hours before he encountered a road, which he walked on for several more hours until Potter found him and picked him up. By the time dawn broke, both were quite angry, as well as 40 miles from where they needed to be. We should have just put a couple of slugs in their domes and buried them in the woods, said Clarence. He had not been a pilot during the war.
When did the plane go down? Asked Potter.
Nowhere near where you bailed out, north of Napa. It's already in the papers. The other team called it in.
How many other teams do you think there are? Asked Potter.
I don't know. Don't ask me about operations, said Clarence. He hadn't eaten for 12 hours or slept for 30, and Potter's blue suit was stupid and he hated it. And he wished Potter had died in the crash with the other fucking idiots. His mood deteriorated when they returned to the Bohemian Grove and found the two local yokels, Jeff and Rusty, had been tied up by the missing blonde, and she had been rescued by a guy with a gun. The subject was still missing. We should process these two, Clarence said. Witnesses.
They are not witnesses, said Potter.
Those guys don't know anything.
Security, said Clarence.
Your ass, said Potter. He checked his watch, almost 8. We need to find a phone and report in. There's a phone at the gatehouse, said Rusty.
See, said Potter, you process him, we'll never find a phone. They headed down the path, back to the Chrysler. They'd parked in the most remote corner of the parking lot. As Potter unlocked the car, someone called to them.
Hey, you bums cops?
A large, apparently drunk guy in a very rumpled suit stumbled out of the forest toward them.
No, said Potter, we're just tourists. Nothing to see here, sir.
The big man kept coming toward them.
Don't give me that shit, he said. I saw it all. I remember it all.
He was pulling something from his pocket.
Where the hell did you guys bring me?
That's close enough, said Clarence. We can't help you. The big man stumbled forward, carried by the slight slope of the forest. He caught himself in the front of the Chrysler, then pushed himself back and squinted to Potter.
Someone sapped me and you know it.
What's in his hand? Clarence whispered.
Looks like a sandwich, said Potter.
Clarence drew his gun and shot Pookie O'Hara in the chest. Pookie fell back dead.
Things are not always what they seem, Clarence said.
Potter approached Pookie's body, poked him with his toe. Then when he got no response, crouched down and examined the remains.
No, it was a meatloaf sandwich.
Witness, Clarence said. He holstered his gun, checked his watch. Turn the car around, I'll help you get him in the trunk. We need to report in. Bailey hung up the phone, turned to Hatch.
Washington says that Clarence and Potter lost the subject. When they got back to the Bohemian Grove, the other girl was gone. She was rescued by a thin man with a gun. I'd guess her bartender boyfriend. Washington thinks they may have taken the subject.
What are our orders? Hatch was shaving.
They were sharing a motel room in the Marina District. Businessmen, on business, they told the desk clerk.
Same as before. Find and return the subject. Process any witnesses.
How do we do that?
First, we find her friend. We try the lesbian club on the Embarcadero.
After breakfast, right?
Now, said Bailey.
Washington said highest priority.
So we're going to go to a nightclub at 8 in the morning. Do you ever think Washington doesn't know what they're doing?
Yes, said Bailey. Get dressed. We go now.
I don't see why we can't have breakfast, said Hatch.
Now, said Bailey. I can't tell you why.
Hatch knew because Bailey had told him that there had been 3 bodies pulled from the wreckage of Roswell. 3 subjects. The general had brought 1 to California, and the other 2 were at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, where medical teams were studying them. What Bailey knew that Hatch didn't know was that 1 of the 2 subjects in Ohio had woken up.
Sometimes a guy's past is like a stone around his neck that dragged him so far down in the dark, he'll never see the light again if he doesn't find a moment to cut it loose. My moment came on the road outside the village of Jenner on the coast, where I bought some gas at a little store and grabbed a Coke and some cheese crackers for Stilton to hold her over. I pulled out and headed back the way we'd come. I got the Ford up to 3rd gear and padded my shirt pocket for a smoke. No luck. Lost somewhere in the woods, I guess. Maybe when I was lifting the Moon Man. Without a word from me, the cheese checked the glove box and came up with 1/2 a pack of Pall Malls. She tapped out 2.
Got a light, mister?
I fished my Zippo out of my pants pocket and handed it to her. She lit the pair and handed 1 to me. We smoked. This was that moment when I needed to cut loose my past. Look, Stilton, before I was a louse, I'm really sorry.
Sorry? You kidding? You ask a lot of guys to carry a dead, wet Moon Man through the woods, they'd be barfing up their toenails.
She leaned over and gave me a smoky smooch on the cheek. I wanted to throw her across the seat and hammer her like Martin Luther on the church door. Such was the power of forgiveness. But I wasn't done confessing. It does occur to me that perhaps it was best that I never heard back from the seminary as a kid, though.
Look, that's sweet, but I swore to myself that if I got you back, I'd come clean. I don't want to lie to you anymore. I was never a soldier. I didn't go to war. Spent the war welding ships at Hunter's Point, and I slept in a warm, dry place, with no one shooting at me every night. I hurt my foot in a warehouse accident the day before Pearl Harbor. I'm a phony. A coward.
I see no evidence of that.
Sip of Coke. Drag out her smoke.
None. Never have.
But I lied to you.
No, you didn't.
I let you think I served, fought, but I didn't.
You would have if you could, right?
Yeah, I tried to sneak into the service. Left home in Idaho to come here, to see if the Navy might take me.
and I never even wrote my folks. I couldn't. I lost 2 brothers in the war. I couldn't go back after that.
Because you thought it would be better on your folks to lose 3 sons?
That's nothing like you went through.
All of a sudden, tears sort of shot down her face, and I almost drove into a ditch before I looked back at the road.
Hey, don't cry, Toots. It's okay.
And she hauled off and punched me in the arm. At the same time, she let out a big sob and a little hint of a smile.
You jerk.
I'll take that. I deserved it. She sniffled, wiped her nose on the back of her hand.
Look, Sammy, I don't want to lie to you either. Thing is, the whole husband killed in the war. Yeah, that happened. But I didn't turn into a grieving mess for the rest of the war. I barely knew the guy. We'd been going out a couple of weeks when he got called up. I was just out of high school, and James, that was his name, he says he can't go off to war and not have anyone to come home to. So he asked me to marry him. I said yes. It was the right thing to do, right? That's what everyone told me. He was an okay guy, but I hadn't even run him through the books to see if he'd pencil out as a husband. So I did the right thing, and in a few days he went off to boot camp, and I saw him once again before he shipped out to the Pacific. That was it. He wrote me all the time, and I wrote him, too. But I didn't even know what to say to him. He met my folks at the wedding, for Christ's sakes. Everyone acted like I was supposed to make this nice little home for us, keep the home fires burning, but it was all fake. We didn't have a life together. We didn't even have a place together. I was still living with my folks. So when I got the chance to work at the shipyard, I took it, and I moved to Richmond. And nights I went home to a room in a residency hotel where I shared a bathroom with 7 other girls. It was okay, I guess. The pay was good. I learned how to do something useful. Well, useful during the war, anyways. On the weekends, a bunch of us girls would come into the city, have some fun. After he was killed, coming into the city, talking to the boys who were shipping out, that's what I looked forward to. I was lonely and alone, and it made me feel special. I didn't love James. He was a guy I knew who didn't make it back. There were a lot of them. So much for the tragic, heartbroken war widow, huh? Pretty horrible, huh?
She wasn't crying anymore. She was kind of daring me to shoot her down. Petulant, I guess. I think you're pretty swell, I said.
No, you don't.
I looked up ahead, where there was a turnout. So I wouldn't hit a tree or go into the river if I pulled off, and so I did. I pulled off, and I set the parking brake, and I turned to her. Yeah, I do, I told her. And forget about before, all about before. I know I've only known you a week, but it's long enough to know that I want to know you another week and another week after that, and as many weeks as there are. That's so many weeks I want to know you. That's how swell I think you are. Yeah? Yeah. I released the brake and put the car in gear and pulled back on River Road. I drove for a little bit, and she held a Coke in her lap like a kid holding a kitten.
Me too, she said.
Yeah?
I said.
Yeah, she said. Okay, then, I said. And I drove some more. We passed back by the Bohemian Grove driveway, and I hunched down a little. I couldn't help it. I'm also somewhat wanted by the law for knocking out a cop and walking away from a work detail.
The cop that was in the car before?
Nah, different cop, long time ago.
Was he a jerk to you?
Made fun of my foot. Ah, he had it coming. And she patted my knee in sympathy. We drove for a minute, quiet, sort of basking in the sweetness of it. You know, I said, maybe if you're nice, later on I'll let you touch the stick of sorrow. She snorted a laugh.
That is the worst come-on line I ever heard.
I don't know, you were crying the last time.
So are you, tough guy.
That is not true. But I didn't get to finish, because there was a noise right behind my head, like a bird hitting the windshield, except it was the back window. And when I turned, when the cheese turned, he was there, right there, his big black almond eyes staring in the window, his little tree frog hands against it. He was making a frantic chirping noise. Holy crap, said the cheese, diving up on the dash, and I let loose a very manly scream myself and tried not to wreck the car. The Moon Man was alive. Chapter 22. Nonplussed. The cheese and I were more than somewhat nonplussed. I pulled the Ford off the road and we sat there, staring straight ahead, listening to him back there.
Maybe he'll go off into the forest, said the cheese. Just give him some time.
I sneaked a peek out of the corner of my eye. The Moon Man was looking right back at me, his little gray mug only a foot away, which was closer than I am strictly comfortable being with a creature from outer space. He made a clicking noise. "He's not going away," I said. "You think he's sore I put him in the ice machine?" I sneaked another peek. "I can't tell. He looks the same as when he was dead, except he's moving." "Well, do something," she said. "I am doing something, I'm thinking." "That's not doing something." I wanted to tell her that he was her Moon Man, so she could do something, but that was not the check I just wrote by professing unending weeks of love for her, more or less. So while the Moon Man chattered, I tried to put myself in his place. If I were a Moon Man and I suddenly woke up in a strange rumble seat on a strange planet, what would I want? I thought of when I have been the only one of a kind in a bunch of different guys. When I was on the welding crew with all the black guys, Lone Jones gave me a sandwich. The first time I went into Chinatown at night, Eddie Mushu's bought me an egg roll. And both those guys were still pals. "Give him one of your cheese crackers," I told the cheese. "Yeah?" she asked, looking at the last of her nabs, reclining in cellophane on her lap. She picked it up with two fingers, cranked the window down just enough to get her hand through, then closed her eyes and held the cracker out the window with all the caution of sliding a cheeseburger through the bars to a bear. I watched the whole thing from my side. The Moon Man stopped chattering, reached out with his thin little tree frog fingers. Yeah, I called them that because there were little round pads on the end of his fingers. I don't know if they were sticky because until a minute before I didn't think he would be needing them for anything, especially wrangling cheese and peanut butter crackers. "Does he like it?" asked the cheese, who still had her eyes scrunched shut, like she was at a creature feature, and Boris Karloff was about to strangle some hapless dame who had a sprained ankle. "He's sniffing it, I think," I said, "although he doesn't really have a nose." The Moon Man looked directly at me, which gave me a case of the willies that shook me to my very scrotum. But he seemed to be saying, "What's the tune, June?" Or would have been if he were a jazzy cat like Mushu's. I gestured for him to try giving it a taste, with my best mime of "give it a taste and chew like you have lips." If the Moon Man had lips, they were very minimal indeed. So he gave it a lick, with a very black and shiny tongue, and a second later popped the whole thing in his mouth and appeared to swallow it whole. He then reached around and tapped on the window through which the cheese had just handed the cracker. "What's he doing?" she asked. "He wants another one," I told her. "And you can look, he just ate it normal-like." "Does he look ticked off?" "Nah, although he has no lips, no nose, and when he blinks a little window-washing membrane seems to go across his eye like a frog. I'd say from his expression, he thinks you are swell." "I don't have any more." "Maybe we should get some real chow," I suggested, like it was as natural as could be to have a live Moon Man in the rumble seat. "I'll bet he's thirsty," said the cheese. "I drank my Coke." That was it, then. I put the Ford in gear, revved her up, and threw some gravel as I popped the clutch and headed out. Just as I hoped, my takeoff threw the Moon Man back in the rumble seat. In fact, he looked a little worried as we went, his little froggy hands clutching on the edge of the seat, his eyes just over the edge. "You're scaring him," said the cheese. "Good, we're even, then." We were gonna need some place where we could eat outside, a burger stand or something. We blew past another gas station and through a dreary forest town called Guerinville, where I took a right, because a sign said it would take us back to the city. Maybe 10 minutes then over the river, winding through the redwoods, the cheese checking on the Moon Man the whole time, signaling him to hang tough and be strong, signaling everything is okay, using her best Rosie the Riveter "We Can Do It" mimes through the back window. We pulled into a little burg called Sebastopol, which was a metropolis by Sonoma County standards, as it had more than one stoplight, and even a hardware store, which did us no good at all. I slowed down, and the cheese mimed to the Moon Man to stay down, which he picked up on. He ducked down so only the mound of pink kimono wrapped around his head was visible to the world. "He gets it," said the cheese. "He understands." "Sure," I said. "You gotta figure he has some smarts. He came from outer space in a flying saucer." "But he crashed," she said. "We could have the village idiot of Moon Man here." "Just because a guy isn't a great driver does not make him a dim bulb. Besides, he might not even have been driving." This was my first time defending a Moon Man, so I was still getting my pitch down. Then it hit me. You know, usually when a guy comes back from the dead,
we show him a little more respect. She turned on me with a very sour face, and I could feel she was winding up to call me 9 kinds of creep for flipping a Jesus card, but then I saw the sign. Look, burgers. Big red letters at the top of a tall sign, in among a row of roadside shops. Shiplap boxes with dirt pullouts large enough for about 6 cars each. A souvenir stand, a liquor store, the burger joint, and a junk shop next to a little fenced-in junkyard, with piles of stoves and washing machines and hubcaps strung on wires. I pulled in between the burger joint and the junk shop, so we weren't in front of the window. I'll go in, I said. You stay with the Moon Man. Before she could answer, the Moon Man vaulted out of the rumble seat and was sort of wobbling off. He walked kind of funny, or looked funny to me, like someone was working him with strings. But then I thought maybe I should cut him a break. Hey, 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 Buster, said the cheese as she jumped out of the car and took off after him. You hold on. Without a word, she caught him by the shoulders and steered him back to the car. She was fearless. A few minutes ago, she couldn't bear to watch him eat a cheese cracker. Now she was manhandling, or, you know, dame-handling him. Go, she said to me, waving me in. I want 2 burgers, medium, everything but onions, some fries and a Coke, 1 for the Moon Man. That all? I wouldn't complain if you came back with a pack of smokes and a pint of old tennis shoes. Got it, I said. I sort of stumbled a little myself, looking back as I headed into the burger joint. She was putting Pookie O'Hara's fedora on the Moon Man, which fit perfectly, with enough brim to cover his big shiny eyes. And she got the pink kimono on him, belted and draped in such a way, so that if you were not looking closely, you would think he was just a perfectly normal Moon Man in a cop's hat, wearing a floor-length pink kimono. 10 minutes later, when I came out with our sack of snacks, the Moon Man and the cheese were not there. I flirted with panic a second before I spotted her bright polka-dot dress across the lot at the junk shop. She was waving me on, like everything was fine. So I shrugged and went over to the liquor store, where I picked up a pack of smokes and a pint of whiskey as instructed. If we get out of this alive, the cheese and I should probably think about cutting back on the sauce, I thought. Back at the car, the cheese was holding a cardboard box full of junk and wearing a big smile. Look, he picked out a bunch of stuff. The Moon Man stood next to her, looking excitedly at the box. It held parts of old radio parts, doorbell batteries, a screwdriver, rusted pliers, a bunch of parts from things I didn't recognize, and a tarnished cornet with 1 working valve. Hey, he likes jazz, I told her, trying to be enthusiastic. We got the whole box for $1.25. You should have seen him. He was running around that junkyard like he was the boss, his little kimono trailing behind him, pointing at this and that, chirping and clicking to beat the band. The Moon Man clicked and chattered to back her up. I noticed a skinny guy in overalls coming out of the junk shop to give us the hairy eyeball again. I could guess what had happened. He didn't even see the Moon Man. The cheese bounced into his junk shop out here in the tapered end of the turd of Schitt's Creek, and he was stunned by our radiance, his mouth watering like a squirrel licking his nuts, while the Moon Man ransacked his wares. Now he was coming to his senses. I understood. We'd better eat these down the road, Dal, I said, returning the hayseed's hairy eyeball in kind. I'll put the junk in the rumble seat and he can ride up here with us, she said. Put the junk up here with us, I said. With the junk between us and the Moon Man in the back, I headed down the road a few miles to a shady spot under a huge oak tree at the edge of a pasture. I parked the car and a picnic was had. Me and the cheese sat on the blanket munching our burgers, while the Moon Man sat over by the fence with his box of junk, chirping and clicking and having a grand old time. Some Holsteins stood nearby, chewing grass and whatnot and doing other cow things, such as standing by the fence looking content and chewing some more. The cheese laid out a burger, a tray of fries, and a Coke on the torn-open sack by the Moon Man and backed away. He'll figure it out, she said. He did. For a guy with a little mouth and a scrawny frame, he could sure pack it away. The burgers and fries were memories in seconds. He poured more of the Coke out of the paper cup onto his kimono than he got in his mouth, but he got what he needed, I guess, because he flipped the cup over his shoulder and started digging in his box of junk. What did you tell the guy at the junk shop about him? I asked the cheese. I said what a nice junk shop he had and asked him, could my daughter look around, as she is an enthusiastic kid when it comes to junk, which he is.
He dragged me over there, and the guy does not think anything is fishy. He didn't say a word, said the cheese. She gave me the smile, posed, changed angles with her shoulders to show off her charms. Sneaky, I said. Nothing sneaky about it. Now the smile slid into a grin, and I was awash in her moxie. Your dress has a little stain from carrying Wet Moon Man, I pointed out with a french fry. Yeah, he didn't notice. Good thing, I said. She uncapped the old tennis shoes and poured a splash over her Coke, then looked at me. Too early? I shook my head. She offered me a splash. Driving, I said. It's too early. Look, he's making something, she said. The Moon Man was messing with his tools, the dry cell batteries, the cornet, twisting parts together with baling wire. He's so cute. You know we can't take him to the examiner now, said the cheese. Why not? Those tax guys are not going to care that he is cute. They are only worried that we know about him. But he's ours. If we show him to the world, they are going to take him away and do experiments on him and stuff. Dal, I don't know how else to keep them from punching our tickets as witnesses otherwise. We'll figure something out. I'm not selling him to Rippies, believe it or not, either. If he wants to get a job down at the wharf, charging tourists to look at him, that's his choice. I'm not selling him. Wouldn't be right. Still, he's not a kid. What's he doing now? She jumped up to her knees. The Moon Man had his bundle of crap wired together, and now he was straining, his big almond eyes going narrow like he was squinting, pointing one of his little froggy fingers, which developed a bulb at the tip, then squirted black fluid. Yikes, said the cheese. That's kinda smart. But out of the fluid oozed a crystal, like he was growing a fingernail. But it wasn't a fingernail. It was like a blue-green crystal a couple of inches long. With his other hand, he snapped the crystal off with the rusted pliers. Then he fitted the crystal into his bundle of crap. What do you think he's doing? Whispered the cheese. I think he's fitting that crystal into a device that will contact the guys on his home planet. See, every crystal has a certain frequency it vibrates at. You can build a radio out of just a crystal and a battery. That crystal probably has the same frequency as his planet, so it will just call them up. The bell of the cornet will direct the signal. No kidding, said the cheese, giving me the wide eyes of wonder. How do you know all that? I read it in a Popular Mechanics. Then there was a huge foom noise and a blinding flash of light from the Moon Man's direction, and when we could see again, where one of the two Holsteins used to be was now a little pile of white ash, and a beefy mushroom cloud rising into the sky above it. Holy crap, said the cheese. It was an old issue, I explained. It was sunny in the city. The water around Pier 29 threw spectral reflections on the old warehouse walls. Bailey and Hatch crouched outside the back door of Jimmy's joint, ready to make their move. Guns? Hatch asked. Bailey considered for a moment, telling Hatch that the subject might be alive and might be venomous. They had no idea what the subject was capable of, and Washington had not been forthcoming with any details, but drawing guns in broad daylight might be noticed. Vasco's supposed to be a small woman, less than 100 pounds, and this Myrtle Simmons is also slim. The bouncer won't be here this time of day. We knock. When the woman in the tuxedo answers, we take her and leverage her to control anyone else. Standard operating procedure? Said Hatch. There is no standard operating procedure, Hatch. No one has done this before. So from now on, this will be standard operating procedure, right? Yes. Knock on the door and grab the tiny lesbian in the tux. That's how they'll put it in the manual. Sarcasm made Bailey feel dirty, out of uniform, but he couldn't help it. Hatch could be such a nitwit. Right, said Hatch. He knocked on the door. Come on in, it's unlocked, came a woman's voice. The heavy wooden door grated on rusted hinges as they pushed on in. A long hallway, dark, with lights spilling out of a door 20 feet down on the right. Come on in, came the woman's voice again. Close the door behind you, would you, gents? They moved inside, Bailey first, signaling for Hatch to close the door. He did. Through his sunglasses, Bailey could barely make out the patch of light coming through the door. He took a tentative step. Jimmy Vasco? He said. Yeah, that's me, said the voice. Step into my office. Before he got 2 more steps, he saw the bright V of a tux shirt on black, the bow tie at about his eye level.
He tried to look over his sunglasses and saw an enormous shade coming toward them, beneath the bright white line of French cuffs, bald fists like the heads of two massive pit bulls. Bailey reached inside his jacket for his .45, and light exploded in his head as he was hit first from the right, then from the left. He heard Hatch shout, then everything went away. They awoke sitting in the Chrysler parked by Pier 29, their black hats in their laps, both their guns gone. Bent remnants of their sunglasses sat on the seat between them. Bailey looked at his partner, who was trying to lift his arm, but giving up and letting his hand fall into his lap. The effort too much. Hatch did manage to moan. His right eye was purple and nearly swollen shut. Bailey tasted blood in his mouth, felt for broken teeth on one side and winced. He touched his jaw. It felt as if a painful grapefruit had grown there. He managed to get the key in the Chrysler's ignition.
"Where?"
Hatch managed to ask.
"Motel," Bailey said.
After they stopped the bleeding and used most of the room towels to make ice packs, Bailey sat at the little table to write his report. Subject may have the ability to greatly enlarge lesbians. Extreme caution recommended in future, he wrote. Across town in the Fillmore, Mrs. Jones was making tea for her guests. Thelonious said they'd just be here a while until it was safe.
"That's a very fancy suit," said Mrs. Jones.
"Thank you, ma'am.
My boy Lonius got one just like it."
"Yeah, we're like two peas in a pod," said Jimmy Vasco.
"Sugar?"
"Yes, please," said Myrtle.
Chapter 23 The Cheese Holds Sway.
Pa-foom!
The second cow went up in a flash, in a mushroom cloud without so much as a moo, and the Moon Man was drawing down on a third Holstein out in the meadow.
"Stop that," barked the cheese. "What's wrong with you?"
And the Moon Man turned and looked at her and made a sad whistling noise. "I was just watching the muzzle of his cornet cow blaster so he didn't point it our way." "Maybe he's a little loopy from being dead for a couple of days," I offered.
"We probably ought to go," the cheese said to me.
"Come on, Moon Man." She waved him over, and to my surprise he followed. The Moon Man walked kind of goofy, more like he was prancing than walking, and I was trying not to laugh in case he took it the wrong way and blasted me into cinders. We got to the car, and the Moon Man climbed up over the bumper into the rumble seat and cradled his cornet cow blaster in his little arms like a baby doll. "We should probably take that from him," I said.
"You go ahead," said the cheese.
"Wait a sec." She ran around my side of the car.
"You got the keys?"
"Yeah," I said.
"Let me have them."
So I handed her the keys.
"Okay," she said.
Then she kissed me, patted my cheek, and said,
"Go take it from him."
I looked at the Moon Man, who suddenly looked very tough in Pookie's hat and the pink kimono. I held my hand out. The cheese gave me the keys. I got in my side of the car and waited for her to get in on her side.
"You're a quick study," she said. "I like that in a guy."
"Yeah," I said.
"Thanks, Toots."
There were more fields and an orchard or two, and the sign said Petaluma, 18 miles, which was where I'd catch Highway 101. From there, it was less than an hour to the Golden Gate and into the city. I stepped on the gas to put some miles between us and the disintegrated Holsteins. The cheese smiled and shook her hair out in the wind. In the mirror, I saw the Moon Man holding on to Pookie's hat with both froggy hands, which meant he was not holding his blaster.
Good.
It was a moment. Then the siren. And there he was in my mirror, a flatfoot, Johnny Law, a copper on a motorcycle. So it was probably a highway patrolman. I was feeling the Walther heavy in my jacket pocket, thinking maybe this guy got a call from Pookie and was laying for us. I pulled over and handed the Walther to the cheese. "Chuck that under the seat, Al, would you?" She did without a word. Fluffed her hair in the mirror, checked her lipstick. I rolled my window all the way down. The cop flipped open his ticket book as he approached, stopped alongside of the Moon Man, who was slouching now in the rumble seat. About all I could see was the big hat and the tarnished brass bell of his death ray.
"Good afternoon, officer," I threw back.
The cheese scooched over to my side.
"Hi," she said.
Somehow during her quick personal reassessment, She had undone the top couple of buttons of her dress, and now, with her nearly in my lap talking out the window to the cop, I felt uncomfortable in several ways I had never experienced before. The 36 Ford coupe has many attractive features, but large side windows are not one of them, and my face and the cheese's face and her charms filled up nearly the whole space. I'm guessing we looked like a comedy and tragedy mask set to the cop, or maybe fear and lust.
"You shouldn't let your kid sit back there," said the cop.
"Kid," I said.
"Yeah, your kid in the rumble seat," said the cop.
"Oh, yeah," I said, "our kid."
"What's wrong with him?" asked the cheese.
"Officer," she added with extra flus.
"Not the kid, the rumble seat. It's not safe. That's why they don't make cars with these anymore."
The cop looked over the moon man, closer than I cared for, and the moon man raised his cornet a tick.
"He's Chinese," I offered quickly.
"But you're not Chinese," said the cop.
"We adopted him, poor kid. The missus can't have kids of her own, on account she caught the clap from a sailor during the war."
"He died at Okinawa," said the cheese.
"God rest his soul," I added.
"So you married her?"
"Yeah, the sailor was my brother. Only decent thing to do was to marry her after her clap cleared up."
The cop looked back at the moon man.
"Why is his head so big?"
"Shh. You want to hurt his feelings?" I said. "The kid can't help it."
"What's wrong with him?" pleaded the cheese.
"Honey, what's wrong with our Chinese big-headed son?"
She slid over me until she was hanging out the window.
"Hey, Buster, are you saying he doesn't deserve a break just because he's a little funny-looking? His father was a goddamn war hero."
"For the Chinese?" asked the cop.
"No," I said. "My brother wasn't Chinese, just a kid."
I was losing the thread of our story. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught the moon man rising, standing up on the seat, drawing a bead on the cop. The cheese started wailing.
"Oh, my God, our son is cursed!"
With the cheese completely filling the window frame, the cop couldn't really see me, and I was furiously shaking my head at the moon man, hoping to discourage him from reducing the cop to ashes.
"No,"
barked the cheese, with a stern look past the cop at the moon man.
"No, no, no, no," she kept on.
Then she covered her face and resumed the sobbing. I grabbed her around the hips and pulled her back into the car, then peeked around. The moon man was sitting again, hiding under his hat. The cop had backed a couple steps out into the road, like maybe we had some kind of crazy that was catching. If there had been any traffic, he would have been creamed, but there wasn't.
"Sorry, officer," I said.
I unsnapped the registration from the steering column, dug for my wallet. The war was tough on a lot of folks. He's still trying to get over it. The cop flipped his ticket pad closed and fitted it into his back pocket.
"You got enough problems, buddy. I'm going to let you off with a warning. Just slow it down and get that kid out of the rumble seat."
He backed away toward his motorcycle. The cheese let out one big last wail of grief to seal the deal. The cop hopped the last few steps, jumped on his Harley, and kicked it to life. The moon man made a sad whistling sound that ended in a click, which could mean goodbye or, "I wish I would have zapped that guy. Who knows?" The cheese came out of her grief pose. "Maybe we should let him ride up here with us?" I was suddenly wiped out. The last 2 days wrung out of me in the last 2 minutes. "How about we get a room down the road and hole up until we figure out what we're going to do?"
"I'm game," she said.
She looked out the back window, then back to me.
"What about him?
Maybe he sleeps in the car?"
"He would make our son sleep in the car?"
I winced at the sound of that. "I don't think I'll be able to sleep with him in the room, Dal. He kind of gives me the willies."
"Bathtub?"
she said.
"Deal."
I fired up the Ford and put it into gear. "I still have the $50 the general gave me," she said.
"May he rest in peace and whatnot."
We checked into a clapboard motel outside of Petaluma. When I got back from fetching dinner, I walked in on the moon man motorboating the cheese.
"Hey," I exclaimed, barely hanging on to my sack of sandwiches.
The cheese was sitting on the bed, and the moon man was standing between her legs, face deep in her cleavage, making a burbling noise I didn't even figure was possible for a mug with no lips.
"Oh, it's okay," said Stilton. "I was helping him fix his kimono when he just stepped up. Kind of cute, really."
"It's wrong in multifarious fucking ways, is what it is," I exclaimed. "Back off, buddy." I pulled the moon man back by one of his little shoulders and he made his sad whistle noise. I glanced around to see where his cornet was before I scolded him further. When I spotted it across the room on a wingback chair decked out in flower fabric, I let loose. "No," I said. "Those are mine. No." "Ah," said the cheese. "You're jealous. He doesn't even have a willy, and his kimono smells like dead skunk. Come on, Stilton, you don't know where he's been." "That's true. What did you get?" "Grilled ham and cheese sandwiches, fries, cokes." Stilton and I ate sitting on the bed, like a little picnic indoors. The moon man ate his stuff sitting in the wingback chair, looking from me to the cheese and back, like he was watching tennis. We watched him right back, like we were munching popcorn at a moon man matinee. "How do you suppose he poops?" whispered the cheese around some fries. "I don't want to think about it," I told her. But then I started to wonder. "He has no butt to speak of. Nothing but smooth, really, below the waist. We don't even know if he's a he." "Well, keep an eye on him," she said. "There's a tub in there, and I haven't had a bath since Moses was a kid." "You need any help scrubbing stuff?" I offered. "Not in front of the moon man," she said with a wink. "But see if you can get the kimono off him and throw it in the laundry. The stink would knock a buzzard off a shit wagon." "Pookie," I explained. "I'll throw the blanket in, too. Lock the bathroom door." Before I headed out the door, I pointed to the moon man, who was still worrying some fries in his chair. "You stay right there, buddy." There was an ice machine along the walk to the office where the laundry was, and I thought maybe the moon man would be more comfortable in there for the night. Maybe that's the kind of weather they have on Uranus, or wherever he was from. I don't know. I put the kimono and the blanket in the washing machine along with my shirt, which was pretty gamey. So I was in my suit jacket and undershirt, talking to the desk clerk like I was an operator while the wash ran.
"That your coop?" he asked.
"He was a kid, maybe 17, thin, dark hair and eyes. Was going to be a lady killer when his skin cleared up. The friends," I told him, "borrowed."
"Don't you want it parked in front of your room?"
"Nah. In fact, if anyone comes in asking, you don't know who it belongs to."
"Fine with me. You want to go back to your room, I'll switch your laundry over when it's time. I gotta be here anyway."
I thought I might take him up on that, but then again, I had a pretty good view of the car and the room from a chair in the little lobby. "Know what? I gotta grab something from the car. I'll be right back. You want anything from the diner? Cup of Joe?" The kid was happy that I thought he was old enough to drink coffee and got a big grin.
"Please," he said, "black."
"Yeah, I take mine with cream and sugar," I told him.
"Yeah, me too," said the kid, now that he had permission.
Looking at the Ford, I remembered that the Walther was still under the seat, where the cheese threw it, when the cops stopped us, and I was getting a little of the heebie-jeebies about someone being on our tail, even though we were off the main highway. So I pocketed the gat. I peeked into the room before I headed back to the front desk. The moon man was in his chair, tuning his death ray with a pair of pliers. I called to the cheese that I was going to watch the laundry. I looked for the pint of old tennis shoes to share with the kid behind the desk, but it appeared that the cheese was enjoying it in her bath. Oh, well, probably not a great idea saucing up the desk clerk anyway. The moon man clicked at me as I closed the door like, "Not to worry." I was worried. I grabbed a couple of coffees from the little diner next door and sat in the lobby talking baseball and movie dames with the kid until my laundry was done. The kid noticed that I was looking out.
"You want me to buzz the room anyone starts sniffing around?" he asked.
"Can you do that?"
"Yeah, until 10. After 10, I just turn on the no vacancy sign, and there's no one on the desk till morning."
"That would be swell, kid." I slid a buck on the counter for his trouble and headed back to the room with my bundle of laundry. When I let myself in, the cheese was reclining on the bed in just her slip. The moon man was nowhere in sight. "I built him a nest," said the cheese, "in the bathtub." I snuck over, eased open the bathroom door, peeked in. The moon man was relaxing among some pillows and a blanket, just the top of his gray noggin showing over the edge.
"What about his blaster?" I whispered.
"Wrapped around it like it's his teddy bear. He's asleep. Sleeps with his eyes open, but you can tell because he snores a little. Kind of creepy." "I could use 40 winks myself," I told her, stretching.
"Yeah, me too," she said, "but not quite yet."
She patted the spot next to her on the bed, toasted me with a water glass she was nursing with an inch of bourbon in it. I put the gun on my nightstand, and I was down to my boxers and beside her in two blinks. "That bathroom got a lock on it?"
I asked. From the inside, she said. As if the Moon Man had heard the cue, the lock clicked. You think he can read our minds?
If he can. Right now he's reading about giving you the razzmatazz, she said.
What if he has given us superpowers, like in the comic books?
Could be. You do know your way around a clitoris.
I read a lot when I was a kid.
That why you furrow your brow when you're at it?
That might be the Moon Man's fault.
He doesn't even have eyebrows, she said.
Inspiration, then, I told her. It was different than before. Not so hungry. Sweet. We fell asleep in each other's arms. I woke up with the barrel of a .45 jammed in my temple. I jumped to a sitting position, but the goon in the black suit and sunglasses pressed the gun on my forehead.
Easy, said Black Suit.
Stilton came awake with a start, but before she could draw a breath to scream, Black Suit said, You make a sound, he gets it. She settled, pulled a sheet up around her neck. Who's in here? Said a guy in a blue suit and sunglasses, rattling the bathroom doorknob. A blue suit. These were not the guys I saw outside of sales. This was a different team of taxmen. No one, I said. I accidentally locked it when I got up to take a leak. Blue suit shrugged like, yeah, right. He shouldered open the door and I could hear the jam crack. I took the opportunity to look for the Walther on the nightstand. It wasn't there. Blue suit shook his head. Nothing. Did he look in the tub? He was a government agent or something. He would look in the tub, right?
Where's the subject? Asked Black Suit, stepping back from me so he could cover both of us with a .45.
What subject? I said. It's just us. I noticed there was no light coming in at the side of the curtains, and I couldn't get a look at my watch on the nightstand. But I guessed it must be past 10 o'clock, and that's why the kid at the desk hadn't warned us. Or maybe they croaked the poor mug. I got kind of sore up at the thought of it.
Maybe you should hit him, said Blue Suit.
Black Suit backhanded me across the eyebrow with the .45. There was a flash of pain. The cheese screamed. I could feel blood running into my eye.
Stop it, you fucks, said the cheese.
I put it in an ice machine at the Bohemian Grove, and then I hightailed it out of there. That's the last I seen of it. I felt my heart sink. Our only chance was if we hadn't seen the Moon Man. Black Suit looked at Blue Suit, then at us. He said,
We can take you with us, make you show us.
Just leave us alone, she said. It's there.
We don't have to take him, said Blue Suit.
What's with the blue suit, I asked. They give you hand-me-downs? You haven't earned your black suit yet?
There are no rules, said Blue Suit.
Yeah, I said. Then why do you mopes wear sunglasses at night?
Then I spotted it. The Walther was on the wing-back chair where the Moon Man had been sitting. They must have just thrown it there. A long way to go with two goons of the .45s between me and it. But it was loaded and the safety was off, just like I left it.
None of your business, said Black Suit.
I suppose you are the ones who crashed the General's plane. What I don't get is why you put Sal in there. He was already dead.
Black looked at Blue. Blue looked back at him.
They didn't even know why.
And why did you put Pearl in there? Asked Stilton.
She didn't even see your stupid Moon Man.
That was irregular, said Blue. Orders from someone outside the organization, not under our normal purview.
Black looked at him like he was going to shoot his partner. That's when I was sure we were not going to get out of there alive. Their .45s weren't cocked. I'd have maybe 1 second to dive across the room, get the Walther, and hope they missed the first shot they could get off. I took a couple of deep breaths, thinking of a distraction.
Like she read my mind, that she said, Hey, fuckstick, and threw the sheet off her in one grand swoop. They were stunned for an instant. I tried to make it across the room in a dive, cover maybe 12 feet, over the edge of the bed to the chair, hoping my hand would land on the Walther as I fell to the floor. I leapt, eyes on nothing but the gun. Stilton screamed. Blue Suit stepped back and sighted me in as Black Suit trailed me and cocked his weapon, which is when the Moon Man came through the door and blasted the cocksuckers.
Chapter 24 Two Perfumes.
Perfume. Perfume.
Blinding flashes. Then great fed-scented mushroom clouds were washing across the ceiling. There was enough heat from the flashes
that I felt like most of my small hairs on the side where blue suit used to be were singed. Where a second ago stood federal agents, now were two little piles of white ash, each with a pair of sunglasses resting in it. The taxmen, guns and all, were gone. The moon man clicked furiously in celebration, or to ask us if we were okay or something. Who knows? He clicks when he's happy, I hoped. Maybe where he's from, they just go out vaporizing stuff for fun, and this was like bowling for him.
You okay?
Asked the cheese. I was in a tangle on the floor between the bed and the chair. She got out of bed and knelt over me, brushed her thumb over my eyebrow, which smarted more than somewhat.
Ow!
You might need stitches. I'll grab a washcloth. I can't see how bad it is. She got up, went to the bathroom. The moon man clicked. Maybe put your slip on or something, Toots. The moon man is getting an eyeful. She came back with a warm washcloth and wiped at my eyebrow as I winced and acted brave. Oh, it's not so bad, she said. You might have a shiner in the morning. Hold this on it until it stops bleeding. I did. I finally got a look at my watch. It was 1 in the morning, which explained why the kid at the desk hadn't warned us. I took a peek out into the parking lot. Looked like there was one other car besides Jimmy Vasco's Ford Coupe and the big black Chrysler the taxman came in. Stilton, can you drive? Absolutely, she said. She was pulling out her dress and had definitely gotten the message that we couldn't hang around. I hope they left the keys in that, I told her. I got dressed and grabbed some change off the nightstand. Look, I need to make some calls. Can you sweep up these guys? The Moon Man is tracking them all over the place. The Moon Man was tracking Fed Ashes all over, leaving his little three-toed footprints on the green linoleum. I live to clean up your messes, said the cheese. Turns out she didn't have a naturally crooked smile. That was just the look she had when she was busting my chops, which it appeared was most of the time. He can help, I told her. It's his mess. Like the kid on the desk had told me, there was no one in the office after 10, so there was no one to work the switchboard. I wanted to make an outgoing call. I had to go to the phone booth out by the road. Felt a little spooky standing out there in a glass box in the dark, on a deserted road, with the stars splattered out over me like a suicide's brains in the ceiling, the neon no vacancy sign buzzing like a barber's clippers. But I was comforted by the fact that a creature from outer space was helping my girlfriend sweep up 2 vaporized government murderers in our room, so it was highly unlikely that things were going to get much weirder in the near future. I dropped some coins and called Jimmy's joint. Jimmy wasn't there, but when they asked who was calling and I told them, Butch, the host, came on the line. Jimmy told me to tell you that she's with your lonesome friend until further notice. That mean anything to you? Yeah, Butch, I told her. Thanks, I owe you a drink when I see you. I jangled some change, talked to an operator, and Lone Jones's mother came on the line.
Here works, Sammy. You want to talk to this little fella?
Yes, ma'am, please. Jimmy Vasco came on the line.
Yeah, said Jimmy. I should have listened to you. Myrtle forgot some of her girly things, so she came by the club to pick them up in the morning. Luckily, your pal Lone came with her. Those mugs you warned us about showed up, and your pal scrambled their eggs for them good. Left them in the car with stars and birdies flying around their noggins. Thought it was a good idea to lay low here until the coast is clear.
Good call, Jimmy. You and Myrtle okay?
Yeah, didn't even scuff our shoes. How about you? You find your squeeze?
She's with me now, fine as frog fur.
Myrtle will be glad to hear it. She's been worried sick.
We're coming back to town. Hold tight until you hear from me.
Will do, but I need to get back to work. Place ain't called Jimmy's joint for nothing.
Soon, I told her. I rang off, juggled some more change, talked to an operator who connected me with Sal's. Benny should have been winding down his shift. I looked up and saw the cheese coming across the parking lot, her red-on-white polka-dot dress and blonde hair catching the moonlight, making her shine against all the gray gravel and black asphalt, like the ghost of Razzmatazz past. She stepped into the booth with me, crushed me against the glass, and closed the door. On the line, Benny, the backup bartender, said,
Sales.
Benny, it's Sammy. You got anything for me?
Yeah, said Benny. Just a second.
I heard late-night bar sounds in the background, a murmuring slur of sad.
Here you go. A guy named Lonius called when I first came in. Said to call him. And another guy called a couple of hours ago, wouldn't say who he was. But he said you'd know. He said you can reach him at your place. He said he has the kid. You got a kid, Sammy?
Nah, Benny, thanks. I hung up. They have the kid, I said to the cheese.
Oh, no, said the cheese.
What kid?
You stinking wallabies are in hot water now, said the kid.
Hatch looked at Bailey, confused. Small kangaroo, Bailey explained.
No, it ain't. You're a dirty liar,
said the kid, who was bound to a chair with some of Sammy's ties.
Can we gag him?
Asked Hatch.
If we gag him, we can't interrogate him, said Bailey.
I ain't telling you nothing. I ain't a rat, Fink. You wait till Sammy finds out about this. He beat a mug to death once just for talking jazz at me. Didn't even break a sweat.
Gentlemen just shoot him? Asked Hatch.
Sammy hit a guy so hard once, he pooped his kidneys out, right out his butt.
Bailey wished for the 10th time since the morning that the giant lesbian hadn't taken their guns.
I told my Uncle Howie about you guys last time you was here, and he said you guys are probably morons from Salt Lake City. Stupid black suits. Morons, that's what you are.
No, kid, we're not, said Bailey.
My ma had a record of that moron tallywhacker choir singing Christmas music. Sounded like someone hurting a dog. I broke it and melted it on the radiator.
Why don't you give it a rest, kid, said Bailey.
What, you think Sammy's gonna call? You don't even know how smart he is. He's way ahead of you morons. You're probably in his trap right now.
The phone rang. Bailey picked it up. Yeah?
That's you, Sammy? The kid yelled. I didn't tell these dirty bungalows nothing.
So you got him, Sammy said. What do you want?
Do you have the subject?
Your moon man?
Yep.
Shh, shushed Bailey.
The subject.
Don't shush me, you son of a bitch. You kidnapped a kid.
Fine. You want to see the kid alive? We want the subject.
That might work, Sammy said.
It has to work.
Is the subject in the same condition it was in when you first encountered it?
Meaning what? Dead? Yeah, it's still dead.
It is? Then a report about the enlarged lesbian will need to be amended, he thought. The venom might have been a passive ability. The subject didn't have to be alive to poison the saloon owner.
Right, Bailey said.
Look, you have to be careful moving the subject.
Yeah, the subject is pretty hard to move, Sammy said.
I don't know. We'll handle it. Just avoid contact with any venomous spines or try not to touch it.
Don't give him nothing, Sammy, the kid yelled. I got these cocksuckers on the ropes.
Well, sounds like you have everything under control, Sammy said. I'll call you later.
Bailey looked at the phone receiver, looked at Hatch, looked at the kid, looked back at Hatch.
What?
Asked Hatch.
What?
You hung up, said Bailey.
He's got you now, you rotten backhose, said the kid. You goons are gonna die like dogs in the dirt, and he's gonna kill you slow and watch you suffer.
Hatch looked at Bailey.
You don't think he'd come here, do you? I mean, we don't have weapons. Maybe we should change locations.
Then who's going to answer the phone when he calls?
Maybe I can procure some weapons, said Hatch.
He's a bartender, not a gunfighter, said Bailey.
Like dogs in the dirt, said the kid.
What happened? Asked the cheese.
They need some time to think, I told her.
But they got the kid from your building?
They want the moon man in exchange. They can't have him. Thing is, these guys have never seen the moon man. On the phone just now, one told me to avoid any poisonous spines.
He doesn't have spines.
Exactly. They don't know what he looks like. And I got the feeling they're not sure if he's dead or alive. I think they think the moon man killed Sal. The two taxmen the moon man blasted didn't have any idea why they put Sal's body on the plane. They weren't the ones who took Sal's body. The guy on the phone was the one that saw Sal. I guess because I had him on ice already, they must have thought I was preserving him for an autopsy or something. And when the taxmen saw the snake bite, they thought the moon man did it.
But the moon man was still in a cooler up at the Grove then.
I don't think they know that. These guys were all working in the dark. They got some powerful friends, but whoever they're working for isn't telling them everything. They aren't even talking with their own guys.
They're still very bad guys, said the cheese. They killed Pearl and the general. We need to help that kid.
We will, but not right away. Let them get to know him.
So they'll feel sorry for him?
Yeah, something like that. You ever read a story called The Ransom of Red Chief?
Don't think so.
We get done with all this, I'll read it to you.
Ah, oh, you're sweet. Nobody's read to me since I was a kid.
Well, I'm gonna read your socks off, Toots.
I can't wait. By the way, I scraped the taxman into an ice bucket with a dinner menu.
Couldn't find a broom. That okay?
Perfect. Let's see if we can find the keys to that Chrysler. We need to get back to the city. I need to talk to Mooshoes.
Yeah, it's going to be a long walk and a broken leg. You keep calling me Toots.
That's me, Petey. Yeah, I'm in a sack, but being put in a sack is different for a black mamba than it is for other people. It's not permanent. It's just where I am until I get the chance to bite ho the cat-fucking uncle who put me here. Bite, bite, bite. Can't believe I didn't see that mother.